Les conférences du Collège de France.
Morning everyone, and welcome to the last lecture of the series. So today we'll be talking about Steiner forest. So this is a generalization of the Steiner tree problem that we've been discussing in the last two lectures. So we'll talk about Steiner forest. And specifically for Steiner forest, there has recently been a breakthrough by a group of people, Amadi and others, who found the first better than two approximation algorithm for this problem. And today I will talk about the simplified version of this. So this is a recent joint paper together with Anupam Gupta, so which is called a simplified better than two approximation. So this is all joint work with Anupam Gupta. Okay, And so maybe let me start by explaining again what the Steiner forest problem is about, that we are all on the same page. So Steiner forest, we are given some undirected graph G with vertices and edges, and we have costs on the edges which are non-negative, like this. So we have some graph, might be looking like maybe like this. Draw some examples. This could be our graph, and then we are also given a collection of pairs, of vertex pairs, of demand pairs, of pairs, ST. So each of these pairs just consists of two vertices. So possibly in this example, we might have one pair S1, T1. Maybe we have another pair S2, T2, and maybe S3, T3, something like that. We can also allow that these pairs are not necessarily disjoint, and the vertex might appear in multiple pairs. It doesn't really matter for the problem whether you allow this or not. So this is fine. And then the solution for the Steiner forest problem would be that we want to find this cheap subset of the edges such that every pair is connected. So for example, we could take these edges here, like this. So the solution doesn't have to be connected, but now S1 and T1 are the same connected component, S2 and T2 are in the same connected component, and S3 and T3 are also in the same connected component. So we can build one component to connect multiple pairs, but then we can also build separate ones. So deciding this is part of the problem. So to state this formally, our task is to find a subset F of the edges, like this yellow one here, such that every pair is connected in the graph restricted to these edges in F. And our objective is, as always, we want to minimize the total cost of the edges. So we want to minimize the cost of edge of F, which is just the sum over all the edges in F, summing up their cost. So that's the Steiner forest problem that we want to look at. And in terms of what is known for this problem, well, the first constant factor approximation is due to Agarwal, Klein, and Ravi from 1991, and this was basically, in some sense, the first time like this primal dual method for network design was used, although they didn't really state it maybe in the way how we see primal dual today, but essentially what they were doing is this. So Klein and Ravi, 1991, they gave a true approximation via the primal dual method. And then this primal dual method was later by Michel Gumans and David Williamson and others like generalized to a broader class of problems, but this true approximation goes back to these three people. And this has been, yeah, basically the state of the art for many years. So until last year or one or two, yeah, basically until last year, this hasn't been improved. And then last year, this group of people, Ahmadi, Golami, Hachagai, Javazade, and Tavi, and this was at last year's Fox. They had gave the first improvement over this, and they gave a 2 minus epsilon approximation for epsilon being something roughly 10 to the minus 11. But anyways, the point was they were the first ones improving on this factor of 2. And then our result, the Zanupam that I want to talk about today, is a 1.994 approximation. So this is somewhat better than their approximation ratio, but the main point is really that the whole thing is simpler. The algorithm a bit, but also the analysis. So it's really more about the simplification than about the improvement and the approximation guarantee. So today I want to present you somehow some of the main ideas behind this algorithm. Of course, we are heavily building on their ideas and using ideas from their paper and some components from them. But today I have to explain this. And in order to explain this, I will first start by looking again at this true approximation and seeing in particular in which cases this true approximation algorithm is bad and gives only a true approximation. But let me first explain again or remind everyone of how this true approximation works. So this is this primal dual algorithm, which is going back to Akhavari, Klein, Ravi, T1, and the way I'm stating it here is more like similar to what Gumans and Williamson did later on in their generalization. Dual algorithm. So for this, we'll first look at what we call a dual solution for the problem. This is basically dual solutions to the dual of the natural linear program. But so what we call a dual solution is we put values yu for subsets of the vertices such that yu is non-negative for all u subset equal v. And we want that if I sum up all the yu such that a particular edge crosses the boundary of u, then this should sum up to no more than the cost of the edge for all edges e. So maybe just to draw some picture, if I have some edge e, then I'm summing here over all the variables yu for sets where e is somehow crossing this cut. This is, and this should always sum up to no more than the cost of the edge. And so this is what we call a dual solution. And now let me also say what the value of a dual solution is. If I have a dual solution y, then the value is that I'm summing over all subsets for which U is what I call separating this. And what separating means is basically that U is a cut, yeah, for which would have. So a cut is separating if there exists a pair ST, so one of my given demand pairs, that is separated by U, so where one of the vertices S and T is inside and the other one is outside. So I have a set U, and then I have maybe S inside and T outside, or the other way around. So these are kind of the separating sets are those for which the corresponding dual variable counts for our objective function. The other ones, like if you try to construct a dual solution with large values, the other ones you could kind of think of always setting to zero, they won't help you. But this is the value of the dual solution. So any such y is a dual solution, and that's what we call the value. And so the general idea in this primal dual algorithm is to construct a dual solution y and a Steiner forest f. Such that the cost of f is at most twice the value of y, and then the value of y, so if I take any dual solution, then the value of this dual solution will always be a lower bound on the cost of my optimum solution. So this is, you can get this from LP duality. You can also try to give some elementary proof, basically going through this weak duality again. So this the value of any dual solution will be a lower bound on the cost of op. So if we find such a Steiner forest f and such a dual solution y, then we will basically get a true approximation. So this is the very high level strategy of this thing. So this is the high-level strategy, and now, of course, there's the question, how do we construct y and how do we construct f? And so for constructing y, we use some dual growth procedure. So let me write this down. How do we construct y? So we start by initializing y to be zero. This is certainly always some dual solution, so we'll always maintain y to be some feasible dual solution. Initialize y to be zero on all sets, and then our algorithm, our dual solution y, will evolve over time t, and initially t is zero. And then we iterate the following. We will always say ct is defined as the connected components of tight edges. So this is, and so tight edges means that in this equality here, if I call this equality here star, if for an edge this inequality here is satisfied with equality, then I will call the edge E tight. This basically means if I have a tight edge, I shouldn't increase the value of YU any further for any of these sets here, because otherwise I would violate the constraint. So tight edges are those where we have equality in this condition star here. And then, yeah, so CT, then I can look at the connected components of the tight L. If I just look at all the tight edges, I can look at the connected components. So then this gives me a partition of the vertex set, and this is what I call CT. So CT is this partition of the vertex set. And then I will say some of these connected components are active. And these active ones are those that are separating. So the active sets are all the sets in CT, all the connected components for which A is separating. And this is, yeah, this is called the active sets or active components sometimes. Okay, so these are the active ones. And then basically what we do is for all the active sets, we simultaneously increase the y, the corresponding y variable for all the active sets until some new edge becomes tight, which changes our component structure and so on. And then we reiterate. So then we increase our time and our variables ya for the active sets A. We increase all of this uniformly at same speed until a new edge becomes tight. And that's basically the algorithm. So you just iterate this until at some point you kind of, yeah, you stop if there are no active sets anymore. So if the active sets, yeah, there are no active sets anymore, then the algorithm stops. So this is the way how this primal dual algorithm constructs the dual solution Y. And then we can also see how the primal dual solution constructs F. And what this is doing is we are basically starting with F being the set of all tight edges. And this note that this is basically, this must be a feasible solution. Yeah, because none of our, if you look at all the connect, we stopped, the algorithm stopped, so none of our connected components was separating. So this means if you look at the connected components of F, then there is no pair where the two vertices lie in different connected components. Otherwise, these two connected components would still be active sets and the algorithm would have continued. So we're starting with F being the set of tight edges, and then when applies what is called reverse deletion. Let me just mention orally what this means. Basically, we go over all our tight edges in the, like, we look at in which order these edges became tight, and now we kind of go through the edges in the opposite direction. That's why it's called reverse deletion. We look at the edges one by one, and we just check. Can I remove this edge and still have a feasible solution? Then I will throw it out. So I just go through them in reverse order in which they became tight, and I just greedily delete the edge if I don't need it for a feasible solution. And that's what this reverse deletion is doing. We won't have to worry very much about this reverse deletion today, so I will not go into much details here. But the important thing is that you can show that this will always yield an edge set F, where the cost of F is at most twice the sum over all the YU variables. And because in this algorithm we've only grown variables corresponding to active sets, the sum over all YU variables here is actually exactly the value of our dual solution, because we've only grown variables by u corresponding to separating sets. So this is why this gives us a true approximation. Okay, so this is basically this classical primal dual algorithm that gives us this true approximation. And now the question is, now we want to improve on this. So let's first ask, like, why is this not better than a factor of two? And so there are a couple of answers to this question. So Y is final dual not better than factor 2. And so one thing that one can see if you're familiar with linear programming and integrality gaps, one thing that is kind of clear if you know the linear program behind is that because the integrality gap of the underlying LP is actually 2, you cannot hope for getting a better approximation factor if you only compare it to the value of a dual solution. But this is kind of like one more like an analysis obstacle. In some sense, you could say, okay, I cannot hope for pursuing this strategy and getting anything better than a factor of 2. This is impossible because the integrality gap of the underlying linear program is in fact exactly 2. But what I want to look at here is kind of a different question. Namely, I want to really look at what are examples where actually the solution we compute is really a factor 2 off, not just from the dual solution we produce, but really a factor 2 off from the optimum solution. So where is this algorithm really only a true approximation, or at least arbitrarily close to this? And basically, there are 2 prototypical examples that show you 2 different reasons, or very different kind of, two different examples where the primal dual algorithm is bad for very different reasons. And we will basically, the algorithm later on will have 2 different components that address in particular that are really kind of tailored to fixing these 2 issues that we will see in these 2 examples. So let me first show you these 2 examples, which very well illustrate what's the problem in primal dual, and then we'll see how we can fix this. And the first problem is, we call this the bad trees issue, which is basically primal dual is already bad at building Steiner trees. So Steiner tree is a special case, and already there, the whole thing is the primal dual algorithm is bad. So let's look at the concrete example. The example is the following. We will have a cycle here. All the edges along the cycle have cost 2. And then we will have 1 vertex in the middle. And these edges going to the center all have cost 1 plus epsilon. And our task is to connect all the squares. So this is an instance of Steiner tree. You can think of this as an instance of Steiner forest, where you have pairs between any 2 squares. So this is the problem. Okay, now what would an optimum solution look like? So what would opt be doing? So an optimum solution would just build this star, just by this star, which would have cost, if we have n of these squares, then we would have, if we have n vertices in total, if we have n of these squares, then we have n times 1 plus epsilon as cost. What would our algorithm do? Well, our final dual algorithm would start growing sets around all these squares. These would be our active components, active sets at the beginning. Then it would grow all of them to a value yu equal to 1. And then all the edges on the cycle would become tight. The tight edges would be all along the cycle. The other edges, these yellow edges, wouldn't be tight. They would still have some slack, and then out of this full cycle, the algorithm would pick all except for 1 edge. So 1 edge we can delete along the cycle in our reverse deletion process, but only 1 of them. So what the algorithm would pay, if we have n squares, then it's n minus 1 times 2. And this is essentially a factor of two off from what the optimum would do. So this is kind of like the first issue, is that the algorithm is already bad at building Steiner trees. So there, to fix this, we will take some inspiration from Steiner tree algorithms to fix this. So this is the first thing. At least this is an issue which intuitively we should be able to somehow, we could hope to fix, because we already know how to do Steiner tree much better, although it's not clear how to even, it's not obvious how to use techniques from Steiner tree and apply them in this context here. But we'll later see that this is possible. And so let me show you a second example which illustrates a different issue. And let me, essentially what the problem is here is that our algorithm is building a tree instead of a matching. Well, let me call this the trees instead of matching issue. And so let's look at a concrete example. We have some pairs, S1, T1, S2, T2, and so on, until SK, TK. And so the graph, underlying graph, is just like this grid. We just have this grid, and we always have this pair, Si, Ti, and we have K of these pairs. And in terms of edge costs, the horizontal edges all have cost 2. And the vertical edges, they each have cost 2 plus epsilon. So they are slightly more expensive. Okay. So what would an optimum solution look like? So what an optimum solution would look like is it would just buy a matching. It would just connect every pair separately. So we would just buy this matching here, and then we would pay k times 2 plus epsilon. So this is this. Now what would our algorithm do? Our algorithm would start, again, growing sets, dual variables. This would be our active sets at the beginning. All the singletons, they are active. They would grow all to a value of yu equal to 1. At that moment, all the horizontal edges would become tight. So now all of these edges are tight. If we grow these dual variables to 1. Now the algorithm is not quite done yet, so it would again grow also this set. And this set, this would get a value of epsilon over 2. Then also all the vertical edges would become tight, but in the reverse deletion process, we will only keep one of these vertical edges, and the other ones would get deleted, because the other ones are not needed for a feasible solution. So then what our algorithm outputs is something where we pay approximately like 4 times k. It's not exactly, but we always, for every pair, I mean, there's this one edge here, and then like this one edge of cost 2 plus epsilon, and then basically for each pair up to 1, maybe we pay this 4 for the two vertical edges. So we basically pay essentially 4 times k, whereas the optimum solution only pays k times 2 plus epsilon. And really the issue here is that we were connecting way too much. Like, essentially, all edges have more or less the same cost here, 2 or 2 plus epsilon. What the optimum solution is doing, it just buys a matching. So it just buys, a perfect matching. Whereas our algorithm, our primal dual algorithm, by the spanning tree. And in the spanning tree, we have essentially twice as many edges as in the perfect matching. So this is why we are losing a factor of 2 here, because we are connecting way too much. Okay. So, okay, and these are essentially the two issues that we need to take care of in this algorithm. So let me now give you an overview of the better than 2 approximation. Just a very high level outline. So what the algorithm does is we essentially start with the primal dual algorithm running this. And then there are two different things. One of them is we are running something that we call component contraction. And this is about fixing issue 1 about the bad trees. And then we run something else, which is what we call the autarkic pair algorithm. Pairs, or in fact, to get our 1.994 approximation, we also use what we call autarkic triples, but that's not important if we just care about factor 2, about beating the factor 2. And this is about fixing issue 2. There's one minor detail here, which is that we are not running at the beginning really the primal dual algorithm, but some slight variant of it, what we call gamma extended primal dual algorithm. But it's like maybe, not too important for now. That's some technicality. And then basically what happens is we get one solution F1 here out of this algorithm, and then we get some solution F2 here out of the other algorithm. And then we return F, which is just the cheaper of F1 and F2. So in some sense, in 2 different things, we start with running essentially the primal dual algorithm, and then we do 2 different things, trying to improve on what we get from the primal dual algorithm in 2 different ways. One of them is intended to fix instances that look like this, and the second one is intended to fix instances that look like that. And then in the end, we would just take the better of the 2 solutions. So this is on a very high level, what's the outline of the algorithm and how this whole thing looks like. Okay. Good. Okay. Good. So, next I want to go into a little bit more details of what happens in these things. In particular, next I will go into what happened in this yellow box here in this component contraction thing. So, and for this, we will look at what we call a component. And so if we have some subset of the vertices, which we call X, so X is some subset of the vertices. So the red ones here. And then I will say, this thing, this yellow edge set K is a component connecting X if it's just some set of edges that connects all the red vertices. So this thing here would be a component connecting X, the yellow thing. That's what I mean by component. In general, there's nothing very particular. I just have some subset of the vertices and some edge set connecting it will be called a component. And so what's the idea behind this component contraction algorithm. So the idea will be that I will pick some subset X of the vertices, then I want to contract X and run the primal dual again. And the idea is then that, if the cost of my component is smaller, then basically the decrease of my primal dual cost then we improved our solution. Because if I take a look at my contracted instance where I contracted X, I find some solution by the primal dual algorithm for this contracted instance, then I can kind of turn it into a solution of my original instance by basically uncontracting and adding my component K. And so if this is cheaper than the decrease of my primal dual cost, then we improved our solution and then hopefully we can do such improvement steps. So this is like intuitively the high level idea that we want to do, follow, which is basically somehow mimicking, for those of you who know this or have been at this last lecture, it's kind of mimicking this Zelikowski's algorithm for Steinitry, which was doing essentially the same thing, but instead of working with primal dual algorithm, it was working with a minimal spanning tree on the terminals. But this is kind of the idea that we want to follow this strategy.
Yes? Is an active component?
So far, X just can be any set of vertices. If we can find any set X of vertices and a component connecting X, such that the cost of my component is cheaper than the decrease of my primal dual cost, then we've made progress, then we win. That's so far just all I'm saying, like just this high level idea. We'll actually need to work a little bit to make this work, but this is kind of like the high level idea that we want to find such sets X, contract them, and then run primal dual again. This is what we would like to do. There are some issues with this and we need to think about how can we find a good set X, which sets do we want to allow there, and then there are a couple of issues there that we need to kind of fix, but the high level idea is this. And at this point, X is just any set. But of course, we haven't yet discussed how we would even find such a set or what we would do really in the algorithm exactly. Okay. Okay. So now there are actually some issues with this. And one issue is about this, I was saying here, just the decrease of my primal dual cost. And so there are different ways how you could think about this primal dual cost. You could either really think about the cost of the solution, which is output by the algorithm, so the cost of F. You could also think about the primal dual cost in terms of our upper bound on the cost, so in terms of twice the sum of the y variables. So I could also think about the decrease of my cost upper bound that comes out of the analysis. The issue is that we have here is like this kind of algorithm will be very difficult to analyze, and it's completely unclear how we should find good sets X. And one reason for this is that, now this is not a precise mathematical statement, but essentially neither the cost of F nor our upper bound, the sum of twice the YU, is a good progress measure. And let me explain this just orally a little bit what I mean by this. So first of all, this cost of F is something, this is really not something you want to analyze how this changes. if you start contracting something, because this is somehow, in some sense, this is very unstable. Like, this is a very unstable quantity. Even if you change the cost of some edges slightly, it could completely change what comes out of your reverse deletion procedure, and this could go very wild. So this is not something that is easy to analyze, what happens if you change the instance a little bit. This other thing is in some sense better, it's like at least in some sense continuous, but it's not, it's also this has some issues. So in particular, both of these sets are, both of these quantities are, for example, not even monotone. So you would hope that if you contract some subset of the vertices, now your problem would become easier because there's less to do. You would kind of hope that these quantities decrease. But this is not necessarily the case. They could blow up even by something close to a factor of 2 or something. So these things are not even like monotone. Like, they really don't behave in the way you want. So even if you contract a very good set X that should actually be connected, you by exactly this component K that you pick in an optimum solution, it could happen that these quantities just go wild and increase something. So this is all kind of very unstable. And basically, in order to fix this, there is a fix to this. And the fix to this is that we are not really running the classical primal dual algorithm here. So we are not looking at the decrease of our classical primal dual algorithm cost. But instead of using the classical primal dual algorithm, we'll use a slight variant of it, which is the time-based primal dual, which basically has the purpose of being stabilizing this whole thing and getting a more easier to analyze version of this. So let me explain you what the difference is between time-based and the usual primal dual. So what we do is we'll basically up front, we will fix what we call a deactivation time for every vertex. DV for every vertex V. And the way we fix this is we run our usual primal dual algorithm once. And then we say dv is the first time that v is not part of an active component. Okay. So this is how we, in this, so we run once one our primal dual algorithm, call dv, so the deactivation time, the first time that v is not part of an active component, and then we have these deactivation times fixed. So this is somehow preparation. And then in later primal dual runs, so maybe just to be clear, so this is something, this fixing the deactivation times is that we do, is something we do once at the beginning, and then later on we will do several time-based primal dual runs. Basically, whenever we contract something, we start a new time-based primal dual run, but we will keep these deactivation times fixed up front. They are fixed once, and they will not be recomputed after we contract something, but they are just fixed once up front. And if we contract something, we will keep this deactivation time. In fact, we will only, in the end, we'll end up only contracting vertices that all have the same deactivation time, so it's kind of clear what deactivation time the new contracted vertex should get. But this is, it's not very important. Okay, so what do we do in later primal dual ones? Essentially, we run the same algorithm, but we change this line here, deciding which of our connected components are active. So this is the thing that changes. Namely, we will say that the active sets are those connected components of tight edges for which there exists a vertex V in this active component, in this set A, with dV being larger than our current time t. But otherwise, the algorithm stays the same, so we just have a different definition of when a set is active. And maybe one thing that one can observe here, if we just stay in the original instance and we don't contract anything, so if you fix these deactivation times like this, and then run the time-based primal dual algorithm once, the result will be exactly the same as in the classical primal dual algorithm. It will do exactly the same thing, because basically these deactivation times are defined in a way to make sure that the primal dual algorithm is doing exactly the same thing, but it starts making a difference once we contract stuff. Because then we keep the original deactivation times, and this kind of makes the whole thing more stable and makes sure that our dual solution doesn't change in that crazy ways as it could change before, where we had this issue that this stuff would be not even monotone or something. So this is this time-based primal dual algorithm. So now, if we work with this time-based primal dual algorithm, we can now actually say how we can turn this thing into really an algorithm, this idea. So what we do is we'll define a function. So gain, if I have several sets, x1 up to xl, then I can say, before we had one set x, now we have sets x1 up to xl, and we say the gain is just the decrease of twice the sum of yu in the time-based primal dual. Where these deactivation times are kind of fixed up front. And this is when contracting each of x1 up to xl. So you kind of think of, I'm first contracting x1, then x2, then x3, and so on. What I would like to do now is I would like to find such sets x1 up to xl, such that each of them can be connected cheaply by a component, but the gain should be large. That's what I would like to have, because then my solution gets cheaper. And in order to make sure that I can actually find a good collection here in polynomial time, I will not allow arbitrary sets x here, because then it would be very difficult to find these sets x1 up to xl. I wouldn't know how to do this. So in order to find a good collection of sets xi in polynomial time, we will restrict the set of possible candidates here that we will be looking at. So first of all, so we'll look at subsets X of the vertices such that X has two properties. One is what we call actively connected, and the other property is that we want that each set here has size at most K, and K is just a sufficiently large constant. So this thing here has some constant. Okay. And actively connected. Let me explain also what this means. So we say that X is actively connected. If and only if the vertices of X belong to the same connected component at the time where the first one of these vertices becomes deactivated. So in other words, I say this vertex set is actively connected if all my vertices stay active, all my vertices in X stay active until they all belong to the same connected component. Basically, one way of thinking about this is that the primal dual algorithm behaves as if there were pairs requiring all these vertices in X to stay connected to each other, because then they would kind of stay active. They would all stay active until they emerge. So you could also think of this as saying the primal dual algorithm wouldn't really change if you add any pair between vertices in X. So this is kind of what this is doing. In this case, we say that they are actively connected. And so maybe two remarks about this. First of all, this actively connected property in fact implies that all these vertices in X have the same deactivation time, because they first, they at some point they get all merged, and then only then now later on they get deactivated, but then all at the same time. The second thing I want to remark is, like, once we that the second condition here, once we require that restrict ourselves to these actively connected sets, one can show that this restriction to constant size sets, this loses only a 1 plus epsilon factor, this restriction. And basically, you show this using the same techniques or the same classical results as for Steiner trees. So there are these results by Borges and Yu about K-restricted Steiner trees that came up in the lecture already last week. And basically, you can use them to show that this restriction here will only lose you a 1 plus epsilon factor. So, but this other restriction is more important in the analysis. Okay, so this is due, and now let me write down the key statement here. What can we say about this function gain now? So we have now this function gain. So gain is a function from 2 to the s to r. So basically s is all the sets xi that we allow, and then we want to gain tells us if I pick several of these sets from s, then it just says what's the decrease of this twice the sum of the yu variables in the time-based primal dual algorithm. And so the nice thing about this now, that this is now a monotone submodular function. So if you don't know what this means, whatever, it's just a function with a very nice properties that we can nicely optimize over. So this allows us now to use submodular optimization techniques so now they are standard techniques. Once we are at that point, we can use standard techniques from submodular optimization to basically find a best collection, or at least approximately best collection of sets x1 up to xl, and then just, for which gain minus the cost for the corresponding components is maximized. So, and for this, for getting this nice structure that gain has this nice monotone submodular, isn't this nice monotone submodular function, it was crucial to use this time-based primal dual algorithm. In fact, if you look into this, you can give a somewhat explicit description of what this gain is. I won't get into this here, but you can kind of nicely describe exactly how this gain looks like. If you look at a dual solution, you can kind of read this off how much you will gain there, and then it's not so difficult to see. Once you have this description of what gain, how gain looks like, to see that this is actually such a monotone submodular function. So this is kind of this time-based primal dual algorithm. By the way, maybe I should mention that as well. So this time-based primal dual algorithm is not something coming newly up here in the Steiner-Forrest work, but this has been used already earlier in some work on cost-sharing mechanisms for Steiner-Forrest. So this is somehow, there it has been used in a slightly different way for a slightly different purpose, but they already had this mechanism for these deactivation times. So this is not completely new. Okay, so this is basically describes the algorithm, what happens in this component contraction thing. Let me say a few words about like the analysis, and in particular, what are the cases where this is already good, and what are then the cases where we still need to do something else. Okay, so what is the key question that we have to ask ourselves in the analysis? In the analysis, so the key question in the analysis is basically, does there exist this collection x1 up to xl where each xi is actively connected such that if I look at the gain of this collection x1 up to xl and I subtract the cost of the corresponding components that I then need to add in the end, cost of k1 up to kl, such that this is large. So basically, if such a collection exists, then I can find it a good collection using my submodular optimization techniques that will find me the approximately best collection. But if this doesn't exist, that doesn't help me much. So the kind of thing is I would like to say that my submodular optimization problem has a good solution so that there is some possibility to make progress. That's what we want to, what we need to prove. If we can prove this, then we are kind of done and know we get a better than true approximation. Okay, and maybe to see this, let's first look at a special case of Steiner tree, just to understand what's going on here. So for Steiner tree, this is actually easy to prove. So what I will do for Steiner tree, I will just use the collection consisting of one single set X, where X is the set of terminals. So first of all, we should convince ourselves that this is something we can do. Well, X is, and the important thing is we need to make sure that X is actively connected. And this is indeed the case because I have basically, basically that's from the definition of what an actively connected set is. So in the primal dual algorithm for Steiner tree, or if I have pairs between every two elements in X, then the connected components containing these vertices in X, they will all stay active until X is fully connected together, which exactly means that X is actively connected. So this is indeed an actively connected set. So I can do this. And then what's the gain of X? So the gain of X will be approximately No, this is not quite true, but it will be essentially twice the sum over all y variables. And sometimes you can think of, if I contract all the terminals, there is not much left for the primal dual algorithm to do. So this will basically, so this twice the YU value will drop from what it was before to essentially zero. There are some technicalities, not actually exactly zero, but let's not worry about this. And what's the cost of my component? So the cost of a component connecting X, well, this means some Steiner tree connecting X, but this is just like the cost of this is just opt. I mean, it's just, that's just what my Steiner tree problem is about. What's the cheapest component connecting X? So this is just opt. So basically, this means that gain minus the cost of my component will be large unless this is already close to the cost of opt, in which case I already have something, a very good approximation. So unless, yeah, my Steiner trees, my result from the primal dual algorithm, which costs at most this, unless this is anyways already very close to the cost of my optimum solution, in which case I'm already very happy, the gain minus the cost of my component will be large. So I will make a lot of progress. And so this way you can kind of fairly easily answer this question for Steiner tree with yes, unless primal dual is already good. And if you kind of go through this and check what you get out of the analysis here with this algorithm, you will in fact exactly recover the result of Silikovsky's relative greedy algorithm and get exactly a 1 plus ln 2 plus epsilon approximation. And in fact, this is really just what's happening in the special case of Steiner tree. This will correspond essentially exactly to this algorithm. Okay, now, this was Steiner tree. Now what happens for Steiner forest? So for Steiner forest, one natural approach, which will be our starting point in some sense, natural approach would be to say, let's take x1 up to xl to be the vertex set of the connected components of opt, of an optimum solution. So now there might be several different connecting components. So let's try to take the vertex sets of these connected components of opt, which is not going to work right away. So there are some issues. The first issue is that these sets might not be actively connected. So there is in general no reason why they should always be actively connected. And essentially, this issue is the reason why this gamma extended exists here. So to fix this issue, this gamma extended thing exists here. So this issue is fixed by gamma extension of the primal dual. In some sense, so on a very high level, what happens? I will not explain this in detail here, but in some sense, this gamma extension will try to keep a few more sets active than what the standard primal dual algorithm would do. So keeping a few more of my connected components active in a careful way. And then basically you can show essentially something like these sets will either be, like morally what happens in the analysis is that you can then either say that these sets are either actively connected, or if not, somehow the analysis of the initial primal dual algorithm has already not been tight, and so you have already been better than a factor of 2 right up front. So that's essentially what's happening, at least like in the tight case, sort of where this thing here at the beginning really gives you only a true approximation. You can basically show that more or less you have this issue is fixed. But okay, I will not get very much into detail, but there is something that you need to care about, that these sets might not be actively connected, and this is the reason for why there's this extra thing happening with this gamma extension there. And then there's a second issue. Let me write this here. Which is also why we need these autarkic pairs. So this is issue number one. And issue number two is that even if all our sets are actively connected, we might not gain enough. Our gain might be too small. So let me explain this. So even if all sets Xi are actively connected, we might not gain enough. And not enough is something that we might gain only like half of the sum of our twice YU. So we might gain only half of what we gained in Steiner tree. Essentially, and this is then not enough. Like if I would put a factor of 1/2 here, this wouldn't be good enough. And so let me show you what the difficult case is. So the difficult case is basically different colors. So the difficult case is that if most of the time the picture looks like this, like these are my active sets at my current time in the algorithm. And then if I look at what my optimum solution is doing, if this is most of the time, it looks like a matching on these active sets. So it could be some tree, it could be, do anything in here. But then basically, if I just look at what happens between these active sets, opt looks like a matching on these active sets. And this is kind of the difficult case. Because really what happens in this time-based primal dual algorithm is that I will kind of, instead of growing two of these red sets after somehow contracting the thing, I will just grow only one of these red sets. And basically if opt is like a matching on these active sets, I'm kind of I'm gaining only half of the red sets. Whereas in Steiner tree, I gained essentially all, maybe up to one. And so because here I'm only gaining one of these half of these red sets, my gain is in some sense only half of everything, which is not enough. So the difficult case is now a bit vague, but the difficult case is essentially that most of the time, so for most times t, opt is almost a matching on the active sets. And this is then the issue which is fixed by the autarkic pairs algorithm. So what this autarkic pairs algorithm is doing, I will not get into full details here, but essentially we are trying to identify candidates for which kind of pairs of active sets might be matched by an optimum solution. And then we will take, some demand pair here, which is like separated by this two, some pair ST, which is separated. We might have some vertex S in here, some vertex T in here, which are connected. And this is like, And what we would then do is once we identified kind of a good candidate set for these active sets that are matched, we would take these demand pairs, contract all of them, just run the true approximation on the whole thing. In the end, we would uncontract and connect every demand pair which we contracted previously simply by a shortest ST path. And basically, this is what's happening in this autarkic pair algorithm. Of course, there are lots of details to consider, like what would even be a good candidate set that you should contract. You can, in the end, find this by some dynamic programming algorithm, and then you need to kind of show that this actually yields to a good approximation in this difficult case. So this is somehow what happens then in the second part. This is kind of fixing this issue here, where opt is most of the time a matching, which is also something that happened basically if you go back to our example in the beginning, which I now erased, where we said, okay, we were building a spanning tree, but opt was just building a matching. They are essentially almost all the time, for most of the algorithm, our active sets were just around these singletons, and opt was really just exactly a matching on these active sets. So this exactly falls into this category. The general case that we want to address is a little bit more general than in this example, where opt was really just literally a matching. Here it's kind of a matching on the active sets, and this is basically what's really the case that is then fixed by this autarkic pair thing. There's also an extension to autarkic triples, which makes the approximation guarantee a bit better, but it's not necessarily to necessarily, this triples part is not necessary to beat the factor of two. So this was like skipping still quite some details, but I hope this still gave you some overview of kind of what are the ingredients in this better than true approximation algorithm, which then gave us this 1.994 approximation. Good, so maybe let me stop here, and I'm happy of course to answer any questions if there are any.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.